Welcome, everyone. We're joined with Toby here in person. Good to see Gloria, Henry, Paul, and Judd. Paul, you're still on your vacation.
It's not a vacation. I actually live up here during the summer.
Right.
And I have a desk. I have a desk. I work. I have a scanner. It's still just a different place.
Very good. You're Malcolm Kavua. Very good. So, very exciting news. We find ourselves on Tezayin Omen Aleph on 16A. And if you were to simply flip the page, I mean, art scroll, maybe flip a few pages, you'll notice that we are almost at the end of the first parak, the first chapter. The first chapter ends on 17A, on Yedzayin Amud Aleph. So that means, in God willing, 2 weeks' time, we will be finishing the first parak of Megillah. Now, while we still got a few left to go, this is the longest parak. It comprises basically half of the Masechta, half of what we have to cover. So not only will we be finishing the first parak, but we'll also be hitting essentially the midpoint of the Gemara here. So that's a big accomplishment. I'm putting that on your radar. I don't know if anyone wants a halftime party or some way to market, or maybe everyone, you know, want to come in person and we'll get some snacks out and some scotch or l'chaim. If anyone wants to spearhead that or be a part of that, do let me know. But yeah, it's this is a little bit longer than Makos, this Masechta. So may as well. Okay. So, Tes Zayin Amud Aleph, we are on the top of the page. We are four lines down. And we just basically finished the section. We're going through the different, we're going through the Megillah. We're darshaning the Megillah. So, we had the story of Achashverosh, how he wakes up in the middle of the night, or he can't fall asleep in the middle of the night. And then he says, oh, you know, it must have been because I didn't honor Mordechai. I didn't pay back my debt. Therefore, if someone wanted to assassinate me, if someone wanted to usurp me, you know what? No one's going to tell me because they have nothing to gain and only what to lose by becoming a part of this plot. So, va'asachin leMordechai, and so shall be done to Mordechai. Amar le, so now Haman's here, and Achashverosh says, ah, you know, Haman, you know, what are we supposed to do with someone? How do we honor someone who the king is meant to honor? And he, so once Haman realizes what's happening here, that's not for him, but Achashverosh is talking about honoring Mordechai, not Haman. Amarle, Manu Mordechai. Who's this Mordechai you're speaking of? Amarle, Hayehudi. This is why, if you look in the Pasuk, let me just, you look in the Pasuk, so that's a lot of detail. And do so for Mordechai, the Jew who is sitting at the gate of the king. Why do we need so many details? Because Haman was trying to play stupid, and he was trying to pretend he didn't know which Mordechai Achashverosh was referring to. Therefore, Achashverosh had to keep giving more details. So, which Mordechai? Amarle, Hayehudi, the Jewish Mordechai. Amarle, Tuva Mordechai, Ika Budai. There are many Jewish Mordechais out there, right? Someone named Moshe. You know, Moshe the Jew. Oh, Shkoyach, there's a million Moshes that are Jewish. Amarle, Hayoshi B'Shar HaMelech. No, the one who dwells at the gate of the king. Amarle, Sagili. So, okay, he realizes that he's not going to be able to back himself out of this one. Achashverosh is pretty adamant here. So Amarle Sagile Bechad the Skirta Inami Bechad Nahara. So you know what? So what is the Skirta? So Rashi says a kfar. You know, like, why not just suffice with the village, or suffice with giving him control over the taxes of a particular river? Why make this whole public display for him? Amarle Achashverosh says, oh, actually that's not a bad suggestion. Hanami Havle Al Tapel Davar Mikol Asher Dibarta. That means when he says, don't forget anything that I mentioned, that you mentioned, include everything, because Achashverosh is just going to have him honored, brought throughout the city. And then Haman's like, oh, why not just give him a river instead? And Achashverosh says, good idea. Let's give him everything that you suggested. And that's what it means. Don't omit anything. Good. Vayikach Haman esal vushah. So this is now the next part of the story progressing, in which Haman now is charged with taking Mordechai out for a joyride. Now, the issue for Haman, the way Chazal set things up, is that he went through a lot more humiliation than the Megillah would seem to let on. And the Gemara is going to elaborate on this. Vayikach Haman es halavush ve'es hasutz. So he comes with the clothing and with the horse. Azul ashkeche de yasira bana kameh. So he saw that Mordechai was giving a shear to his fellow rabbis. And Mordechai was in the middle. They're learning, you know, whatever the weekly Gemara shear was, or learning Hilchos Kemitza, teaching about the measurements for the flour. So Mordechai saw that Haman decided to show up to yeshiva that day, and he came with a horse. He thought he was coming to bring Mordechai out to the gallows. So Amalahu, Mordechai says, L'Rabbanan, Hai Risho L'mikdal Nashi Ka'asi. This man now is Russia. This wicked man is coming to take me, to kill me. Zilu Mikame, Dilo Tichavu V'Galachto. So what he told them was, get out of here before you get consumed within this conflagration that he's going to make. But he shaitan this atif Mordechai of a kavli tzalusa. In that moment, Mordechai wrapped himself in a talis and he began to pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Asa Haman v'yasev le'kamayhu. Haman comes and he's just, you know, he's sitting there and waiting patiently. V'orich ad desalik Mordechai tzalusa. He waits until Mordechai finishes davening. Amar lehu. So but while he's waiting, he turns to the other rabbis who didn't successfully get out, apparently. They tried slipping past him, but without success. So, B'mai Askitu, what were you studying? Haman asked them. Amrule, B'zman Shabbos HaMikdash Kaya, Mad V'nadim Mincha, Maisi Yimolei Kumtzei D'Sulta, Mishaprele. So, back in the times of our temple, someone who dedicates a Karban Mincha, he would bring a kemitza of flour in order to atone for his sin. Amrulehu. Haman responds, he replies, Asa Mali Kumtse Kimcha Didhu, Vidach Yasar Alpeki Kari Kaspa Didi. Yeah, so let your Kemitza flower come and be able to supersede and be able to overpower the 10,000 kikar of silver that I am giving. So he's basically saying, you know, what's your religion doing for you? I was able to buy off the king in order to kill all of you. Amarle, Mordechai then finishes. He comes over and says, Rasha, Eved Shekana Nechasim, Eved Lemiyu Nechasim Lemi. Remember, we learned this in a previous week through that Medrash in Yaakov Shmoni, that Haman was actually purchased by Mordechai because they were serving as officers in Achashverosh's army. Haman misused his budget, so he sold himself to Mordechai in order to get rations for his troops. So Mordechai is saying, those 10,000 kikar of kesef, they actually belong to me. So you can't accomplish anything with them. I own you. And since I own you, anything you own perforce becomes my own. Amarle, Haman's like, okay, fine. You bested me in that. But let's just get down to business to why I came here. Amarle, kum levush hani mani rechov hai susay. Put on this clothing. Get on the horse. We're heading out of here. The Baila Chamaka that the king wants you to wear. Amarle lo yachilna ad the ayne levei bani ve'eshkulamazie. The lav orach ara leshtamushe b'mani demalka. So what he said was, you know, I first have to go to the bathhouse, then I need to get a haircut because it's not covetic. You give me Achashverosh's clothing, and I'm just going to wear my sackcloth now. I have to, you know, bathe beforehand. I have to cut my hair before, and it has to be masudar.
By the way, it was called moed. There was a shiloh.
Yes, it's a shiloh. How do you do a chomoed? So actually, I brought the Cheshuki Chemed with me over here, which he deals with that question. Basically, let's say tar before chol hamoed, and it goes into, well, if you're not doing the maisa, you're just being passive. But actually, we learned this in Makos, that if I recall correctly, there's an isser for the person who actually will put the razor to someone's beard or take off his payas. And there's an isser also to be passive and allow it to happen to you, even if you're not actively doing anything. That was a discussion we had over there. Henry, did you think of that on your own, or you saw that somewhere?
No, I scrolled the footnotes. It even gives an answer.
Oh, yeah, no? What's Zog the Hilgard scroll?
If you've been released from prison or something like that, that's considered something that you couldn't control, so you can still get a haircut of Chalmoid. So in Mordechai's case, he was fasting the days before. So that was, it was like an exception.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. So the Mishnah is at the end of Moed Katan deal, and the Gemara is at the end of Moed Katan deal with this. And the idea is that, right, if you're let out of a base Haisurim, or you just came from a Dina Sayyam, you didn't have a chance, because why you're not allowed to shave? Why are you not allowed to get a haircut on Chol HaMoed? Because if you know you could get on Chol HaMoed, and I've gone into Shabbos once or twice. I'm like, just a little bit of stubble. It's not a big deal. People don't realize how young I am. So then afterwards, I'll shave afterwards. So people have that mentality going into Chol HaMoed. They say, and this is actually what we do nowadays. How often do we say, you know what? I can schedule my doctor appointment on Chol HaMoed. I can go shopping now on Chol HaMoed. So we schedule all these malachos actually for Chol HaMoed. So Chazal said, that's not proper. So therefore, there's actually an isser. In theory, Ramosha has a tshuva, which helps us get around this. But in theory, even if one gets a haircut and shaves prior to Chol HaMoed, they're not allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed. But there's a school of thought in the Rishonim, and then Ramosha paskins this way, that men are allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed if they did so before Yontif. So, okay, that helps us out. I think the most of the modern Orthodox community relies on the Shita, even if they don't realize they're relying on the Shita. Okay, in Kamakum Laharet. So, what's going on over here? Shadra Esther Vesterinu Lekula Bei Bani Lekula Umni. So, they hatched a plot. Esther then tells all the different barbers, all the different bathhouse owners, that they got to shut down for the day. As the queen, she has the power to do that. So she declares some holiday. I don't know how this, how he got the message to her fast enough to make this all happen, but okay. So So then what did Haman have to do? He had to actually bring Mordechai there himself and bathe him. And then he went and he got, Raj explains, it's kind of misbarai, it's a kind of scissors, the base, because Shako be Mase. So Haman himself had to bathe Mordechai and had to give him the haircut. And what happened was, when he was grooming him, he almost like passed out and he let out a big groan. Amarle, am I coming to Nachas? Mordechai says, what's wrong? Why are you moaning and groaning? Amarle, Gavra to have a choshulay the map and the clue of Oni, Hashta, Lishavi, Balani, Sapar, that I, who was the greatest of all the multitudes of Achashverosh's officers, and now I've been reduced to a barber, to a bathhouse, a bath, I don't know what you call that. Amarle, Russia, Ulasa, Parshal, Bar, Kartsumahisa. Apparently, he says, what's the big deal? Back in the day, before you made it in the big time, you were a barber. Tana Haman Separ Shal Kfar Kartam Heo Esrim Shana. In fact, our rabbis teach us that he was a barber for 22 years, which I think makes for an inspirational story. That he started off as a barber, honest profession, and then one day, he rose to become so great that he had the power to kill all the Jews. It's really, it's a beautiful story about a person who could build himself up. That's the beauty of him. So afterwards, after he gave him the haircut and he dresses him, Amarle, Sak Varachav, get up and get on the horse. I gave you the haircut. I bathed you. Let's go. Amarle lo yachilna b'chachisha chal mimei tanisa. Mordechai says, I've been fasting for all these days. How can I get up on the horse? I'm so weak. So gachin usalik. So Haman bends down in order so that Mordechai can get can step on him to get onto the horse. It's actually a similar lashon in the Gemara's in Kiddushin, when it talks about kibud ha'ein. I'm forgetting the name of the mower that was, that he would be gachin, he would lean down, or so his mother would be able to get onto her bed. Similar use of language. He saw it, but when Mordechai started going up, Ba'atbe, he gave him a good kick on the way up. Amarle, look, Sivachu ben Afolay Vecha at Tismach. So you see, Haman was a learning guy. Apparently, he knew some of the Bible. So he says, hey, wait a minute, doesn't it say in your Holy Bible, doesn't it say in Sefer Mishle that you shouldn't rejoice in the downfall of your enemies? Amarle, Mordechai responds, Hani Mili be Yisrael. You have to be part of the Jewish membership club for this to apply. But for you, who's an enemy of the Jewish people, Siv Ata Abamasino Sidroch, that you shall trample on their bamos, on their high places. And so this seems to be a distinction between, this is a classic example of where people will quote certain ideas out of context, and then many times it gets qualified to referring only to the Jews. The most, I shouldn't say famous example, because a lot of people don't realize it. V'hafta l'reicha kamocha. So you go all these rallies and people say, V'hafta l'reicha kamocha, love your neighbor as yourself. You know, l'reicha is actually, it's a qualification. It limits it to someone who's reicha b'torah u'mitzvos. Someone who is your friend, neighbor, you're in terms of them also abiding by Torah law. When we did the sugya of onas devarim, political correctness, was the same idea over there, that the iser of onah only applies to amisecha, someone who is itcha b'torah u'mitzvos, who's with you in Torah mitzvos, is considered a member in good standing, let's call it. You see, so someone could be a member of the Jewish people, but if they're not a member in good standing, then these laws don't apply to them. So, okay, moving on. Vayikra lefanav, kachi esel isha sheramel chavis b'karo. So you have a nakiv azu b'shvila devei haman. So this is the front of the Megillah I always had as a kid. You see Mordechai is on the horse, and he's decked out in all the cool clothing from Achashverosh. And Haman is, with his head down, chafoy rosh, is pulling the horse and leading him through the street. And what do you know? They just happened to pass by the Haman residence. Chazise barte dekaima igra. So what happened was, his daughter, who was standing on the roof, saw them. Savra hai derafi of avuha. She thought it makes sense that Haman, who's Ahasuerus's head officer, he would be the one on the horse. And who was being humiliated to lead him? By the Misagi Kamei, Mordechai. So what did she do? Shakla atzit the beis hakisei, shadisei arisha davua. So she, you know, they didn't have plumbing back then. So she actually took the latrine. She took the pot and she poured it off the roof. And it goes smack onto Haman's head. Dali ene v'chazas da'avuahu. So when Haman lifted his eyes and then they made eye contact for a moment, she realized what just happened, that she had just humiliated her father. Nafla me'igra la'ara. She fell from the roof, from her house to the ground. Umesa, and then she died. Vahenusiv, and that's what it means when the pasuk says, "Vayoshav Mordechai el Shar Hamelech," that Mordechai returned to the gate of the king. Amar Sheisha Sheshav l'Sakul Taniso. Mordechai immediately returned back to his fasting regimen. Vahaman Nidchav el Beso Avel v'Chafwei Rosh, and Haman returned back to his house, and he was in a state of avelus and mourning v'Chafwei Rosh. Avel Abito v'chafay rosh asheiralo. So he was an avelus over the death of his daughter, and he was despondent for everything that just occurred to him, all the humiliation that he had to go through until that point. Good. Any questions at this point? Okay.
It's almost comical.
It is, and one could say that to a certain degree, like I'm not a Tanakh teacher. But I wouldn't be surprised if one of our previous Tanakh teachers classified Megillas Esther as a comedy. Yeah? Any of our Tanakh teachers we've had, any of those shiurim that we've had, did they ever classify it like that? But it's I've heard that Megillas Esther is supposed to be understood as a bit of a comedy to a certain degree. Okay, you need someone who knows Tanakh and literature better than I do to make that assessment. So Haman comes back and he seeks the counsel of Zeresh's wife as well as all of his beloved ones. So Karlu Oavav, Karlu Chachamav. If you look in the pasuk, first it calls all of the members of his household Ohavav, his beloved ones, and then Chachamav, the wise ones. So why the change of terminology? To teach us that even if someone who's not Jewish comes up with a really great idea, they too are called a chacham, they too are called a wise man. That might not be a chiddush to us, but you know, I always found it a little bit humorous. I used to think of just the yeshivish thing, but apparently in the gadza olam of the Jewish world, this is the thing where like if someone's like really smart, we're like, oh, that person has to be Jewish. Like how often do we see all the time, like there's like a forward article, anytime like there's a some celebrity that dies or politician that dies, the forward always has an article like the secret Jewish history of so-and-so. Like the person had to like, you know, have some connection to Judaism in order for them to be significant. So, you know, there can be perfectly good non-Jews out there who aren't Albert Einstein, but also came up with groundbreaking ideas. Okay, very good.
But I don't understand why we can acknowledge that. Why?
I'm not sure I follow. Toby's saying that there seems to be an incongruity between the exclusion of non-Jews for benefit like the Haftaricha Kamocha, while saying that we could call them Chachamim.
I mean, it just, if you can acknowledge their worth.
Oh, I see.
In that way, yeah. Then how do you justify that to
them? Right. So I would say like this, you know, we'll use the shul example. Hopefully it's not too controversial. Oh, no, I shouldn't. Okay. That's the best analogy I could come up with. Okay, I'll explain to you what I mean. Meaning, I could acknowledge someone's worth as a human being and an intelligent person who has much to offer. But if when you become a member of a certain society, you get certain perks that come along the way. So like Ribbis, for instance, I could charge a guy Ribbis interest. I can't charge a Jew. It's not because Goyim have necessarily, because some might say that, but let's go with the nicer approach. It's not because a Goyim necessarily has no worth and has nothing good to offer, but just that when you join the Jewish membership club, you get certain perks that come along the way. You know, you could pay 45 for an event instead of 55 for an event. So it doesn't mean we don't value the people who pay 55. It just means you get extra perks along the way.
But how far does it go? I mean, can you is it
Actually, you technically, the Chavetz Chaim deals with this. About, Toby asked about saying Lashon Hara about a non-Jew. There are many poskim who say you are allowed to from a technical standpoint, but then that's Bein Adam LeChavero. But Bein Adam LeAtzmo, it's not good for you, for your own midos, to become ragel, to become accustomed to speaking bad. In fact, we have the notion of a Lashon Naki in general. One's not supposed to even speak bad about inanimate objects because it just, it's not good for one's own character development. So that's okay. But this is a good question. This is a much broader question about how Judaism relates to those who aren't part of the membership club, which is a huge topic that many have tackled from many different angles and I will not be able to adequately address, but I tried somewhat. There are many. You should just know that there's a huge school within Jewish tradition that just thinks that Goyim are bad and evil and irredeemable, and we're trying not to go down that line, but it exists. Okay.
Not in the shul.
Okay. So here we go back into the Gemara, Rabosai. Back into the Gemara. Where did we leave off? No, I have lost. If he's sorry, who to Mordechai? They said if. This person is of Jewish descent. Right now, we think Yehuda means Jewish. Then, Amrule, Imishar Shvat Mukasi, Yehalaslay, Imishib Yehuda Ben Yamin, Ephraim Ben Asher, Lo Yehalaslay. So, Yehudim here actually doesn't mean Jews, but actually is referring to Shevet Yehuda. And what they were saying is that if he's a descendant of Shevet Yehuda, Ben Yamin, Ephraim, or Menashe, then you will not prevail over him. How do we know this? How do we know these four shvatim have qualities that enable them to triumph over their enemies? Yehuda Dirsiv, Yodcha Be'erev Oivecha, So, okay, Yehuda is going to be able to have his sword at the throat of his enemies. And Enoch Tichsibahu, regarding the others, it is what? Okay. Ifnei Ephraim Ubinyam Unasha, Ora Eskvur. Actually, sorry, I just wanted to check up one thing in the pasuk. Sorry. Check the pasuk. So Lifnei Ephraim Ubinyam Unasha, Ora Eskvur Asech. So over here, there's a request that God brings his strength to the aid of Ephraim Binyamin and Menashe. And as we've discussed in the previous year, Mordechai is either from Binyamin or Yehuda and Binyamin, so to some degree or another, so hence he succeeds. Kinefalti Paul, the fun of. So why do we mention Nafal, that there are two Nefilas, two descents? Darish Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi, Shtei Nefilas Alalu Lama, as we know, the Jewish people are likened to the dust of the earth as well as to the stars of the sky. So Kishen Yordan, when we go down, pretty far, and it doesn't take an expert in Jewish history to see that. Adafar, Ukishen Olin Ona Alakokhabim. And when we rise all the way to the stars. So that's what it means, that there'll be a double nefila, a double descent for our enemies when we succeed, because we'll have a double ascent upward to the stars. So then comes all the servants of the king to bring Haman to the Suda. The Avhilu, so what do we mean by Avhilu? They rushed him in. So Rashi tells us, remember how that chamber pot was thrown on him, so he didn't even get a chance to bathe and shower before coming. So he's really in the dumps. Kinakarnu ami v'ami. So now Esther, finally, this is the point, the crescendo, where Esther is ready to point the finger at Haman and say, this man wants to kill my people. Kin Sarah shav nezek hamelech. Amrlo, what she was saying was, Sar zeh ino shav nezek shamelech. This evil, wicked man, this enemy, Haman, he doesn't care about what kind of cost you, Achashverosh, have to endure. Ikni baba Vashti yukatla. He was jealous for Vashti, so he had her killed. Hasha ikni b'didili v'ayim l'katli. Now he's jealous for me, and he wants to have me killed as well. So this is actually a culmination. Remember, we gave all these different reasons last time why Esther had the Suda and invited Haman to the Suda. One of the reasons given was to give Achashverosh the impression that she and Haman were either having an affair, or at least that Haman wanted to have one. And so now she built this whole suspicion within Achashverosh's mind, she's saying, yeah, you know why he suggested killing Vashti? Because he wanted Vashti. If he couldn't have her, no one can have her. Same thing with me. Please save me, Achashverosh. So notice that when Achashverosh addresses Esther, it says Vayomer twice. Vayomer, Vayomer, Lamali. Amar Rabbi Avo, B'tchila Ayde Turkaman. Think about this. Until now, Achashverosh only addressed her with a Meturgaman, with a translator in between. Kiva de Amrale, de Beishol Kasina, Miyad Vayomer la Esther Hamalka. But once he discovered, like, oh, you're from the Jewish people, you're descended from Shol HaMelech, you're not just some nobody, but you actually have yichus, you have significant lineage. So then he addressed her directly. So this is one way to understand that maybe there was, he thought there was a linguistic barrier, or it's just that the king, you know, the king would have a meturgamon, a go-between, an intermediary between him and anyone he addressed, as just a way of separating the common folk from the king. So just imagine this, like, for all this time, Achashverosh was with her, and supposedly he never talked to her directly. Very firm guy, very firm guy. Okay, moving on. Let's see. Batomar Esther Ish Tsar Boyev Haman Harazep. Aramar Rabbi Lazar Malay Shah Hais Mechava Klabi Achashverosh. She actually, one way to understand this, she kind of just lost at a certain point. She was about to actually point out a chair to himself. She was like, why are you so distressed? And she said, you're the source of my distress. But then Ubam Malach came an angel, the Sutter Yadda Kabi Haman. He whacks her hand and moves it to point at Haman instead. That's why Esther, because look, Esther says, Ish Sar Ve'oyev Haman Haraza. So because she was winding up to like point at Akash, saying, this wicked man. Then an angel comes and pushes her hand. Haman. It was Haman. That's what's going on over there. That's why she seems to be winding up with all these adjectives, because she's ready to point to Achashverosh. And then as her hand gets moved, she has to add in Haman at the end of that phrase. She can just say Haman right away. The Hamelech kam b'chamaso. So the Melech, the king, got up in his anger. The Hamelech shav miginas habeisan. And then, so he, after this, he goes to the courtyard, to the garden. But when he comes back also, he returns from the garden. Why do we need to be told that he came back from the garden? If we know he went to the garden, that's where he's probably returning from. Ma kishiva lekima, to tell us that the way he went out is the way he came back. Ma kima b'chema, avshi b'chema. Just as he left the garden in great anger, he also returned in great anger. Why? What happened in the garden? He saw there were angels there that took on the appearance of men. And they began uprooting the trees in Achashverosh's beloved garden. What are you guys doing? Why are you taking out my trees? We're just following Haman's orders. He told us to get rid of all the plants in the garden.
Haman, can I ask a question?
Let me just finish this piece, and we'll circle right back. Also, the base say, "Bahaman nofah mita." So he comes back and he sees that Haman had fallen onto the couch that Esther was on. Nofel, nofel me by the way. What's it mean? Nofel. It should say nofel in present in past tense. It's to teach us that he didn't deliberately put himself there, but there are a lot of angels pushing people around over here. An angel came and pushed Haman onto the same couch as Esther, so making it appear as if he assaulted her. Amar, they basically invite me bara. So Achashverosh says, woe is to me from within my house and from outside my house, inside in terms of regarding Esther and Haman, outside regarding Haman having his entire garden and everything being torn up in front of him. And that's what it means when the king said that you're trying to assault the queen while I'm here within the house. Good. Let me pause for a moment. Phyllis, you had a question.
Yes, I'm wondering why would Esther be pointing toward Achashverosh as the primary adversary when Mordechai and her had this clear understanding, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think there are a few approaches, but I think the easiest way, at least for me, to understand it is that she kind of just lost it at a certain point. The emotions were all pent up. And Achashverosh is, think about it, day after day, she's just like living with this guy who's like, oh, what am I doing wrong? What am I doing wrong? And yeah. Right. Of course.
I can't hear what you're supposed
to say. So what Toby's saying is that she was upset at Achashverosh for approving of Haman's plan. Absolutely. That's what I would say. But I think the question that Phyllis is bringing up is she's been working, patiently this entire time to set up Haman. What she hoped to accomplish by saying, Achashverosh, it's your fault. Achashverosh isn't going to say, off with my head. The whole idea of having all these pseudos planting suspicion in Achashverosh's mind was to win over Achashverosh to knock out
him. Exactly.
So come on. Phyllis is asking, which is a great question, which is, why spoil everything right at the end when you're about to finally bring all of your plans to fruition? That's the question.
It's almost like she wasn't clear on something. So.
So, okay. I remember there's some other T-roots and they're not coming to mind right now, but I think it's kind of one of those instances where the cash is better than the turrets. Okay. Let's wrap up the Gemara. Vayomer Carvona. So who's this Carvona guy? Amar Rabbi Elazar. Af Carvona Rusha Ba'usa Itzahaya. So Carvona was an ally of Haman. Keosh Rosh Liskamets Itzaso Miad Baruch. But once he saw that the going was bad and that Haman was being kicked out of his position of power, then Carvona said, you know what? I'm willing to help out you guys. I'll testify against Haman. And, if anyone's, there's not a reference to the January 6th proceedings going on right now. But basically what Carvona is saying is he's an opportunist. So he thought Haman was going to win the day. So he took Haman's side. Now he sees the favor has shifted to the Jewish people. So now he's helping them out, making it seem like he was a good guy all along. So God's like, I have any mercy on you. And those who were at your hand, those who were your assets, are going to flee from you and they're going to defect to the other side. So, you know, it's kind of funny because we say Charvona at the end.
Zachor Latov. Zachor Latov.
Zachor Latov. Very good. So it's a question, you know, he's an opportunist. Why are we praising him? And people have their different Torah. You know, even when you're opportunist, Shalishma, Belishma, et cetera, we can leave it for Purim time. But it's interesting to know that if he's truly an opportunist, then why is he Zachor Latov? Okay. Bechamas Hamel Shafacha. And the anger of the king was forgotten. So notice that there's two chafs in here. It's a very odd word. The two chafs seem to be alluding to two things that were forgotten. Shtei shchichos halalu lama, achashom achashom achashashir. One interpretation is that God's anger subsided with the Jewish people, and also the anger of Achashverosh subsided with all this manipulation he was going through with Haman. Or the other one is that his anger in regards to Haman having manipulated him into killing Vashti for all the evil that he wrought upon Esther, that was subsided once Haman was put to death. It's actually interesting. Maybe you can tell me if I'm reading this the right way. You look at Rashi, he says, Achashel Esther, Shekos Achashirash al Mashatza Haman Esther. He wasn't so angry with what Haman did to him, but he was actually very angry on Esther's behalf with what Haman did to her. So it actually, from that reading of Rashi, it sounds like he genuinely cared for Esther's welfare, and he was incensed at the fact that she had to endure all of this stress and all of the things she went through because of Haman. So That's not usually how we portray Achashverosh. We usually portray Achashverosh kind of just using Esther. And maybe I'm reading too much into his Rashi, but he seems to be indicating his understanding of the Gemara is that actually Achashverosh genuinely cared for Esther as a person. So
now he's regretting.
Right. It seems that, you know, he seems to be thinking of, yeah, it's very interesting bringing up Vashti again. I agree. Okay. Now, this is a new section here, and basically what the Gemara is going to do, and we'll only do the first part that goes to the next page, and then we'll end there in the Gemara, is that as we know, that Mordechai is an Ish Yemini, he's a descendant of Binyamin, he's from Sheva Binyamin. And what we're going to see is what we call Maisa Avos Simon Labanim, a term perhaps you've heard at some point, in which things that our forefathers have done is a maisa, the maisa they do is a simon for what will happen in future generations for the Jewish people. So this is an instance of that. A lot of, that's like a theme in Sefer Bereishis. The chulam nasa ish chalifos smalos, binyan nasa chamish chalifos. So Yosef is giving out gifts to all of his brothers. Each one gets a nice new pair of clothing. Binyamin gets five pairs of clothing. Wait a minute, the Gemara asks. Asher Davarsh and its Darbo Osad Sadek, turning the page. Yichashalbo? Is Yosef going to fall into the same trap that brought him down to Egypt to begin with? Remember how Yosef got down to Egypt? Yeah, favoritism, Toby, exactly. So now he's gonna display favoritism to his brother? Like, did he learn anything from this whole entire ordeal? Yeah. Right, you're saying Binyamin never did harm to him, so okay, that's possible. But still, I mean, it still smacks of favoritism. So the Amar Rava Bar Mechatzi Amar Rav Chava Bar Gvorya Amar Rav Vishvil Mishkal Shnei Slay Mila Shahosim Yaakov Yosef Mishar Echad Viskala Davar Yod Avosim Mitzrayim. Just because, you know, 2 slime worth of nice wool that Yaakov gave to Yosef, more so than his brothers, that's what set everything into motion that brought all of the Jewish people down to Egypt to be enslaved. All because just a little extra wool. That's what set everything into motion. It's like the butterfly effect. Amar Rabbi Yamin bar Yefes remes ramas lo she'asid ben lotzei simeno she'atz b'fnei ha'mech v'chamisha l'gushei ma'achos. So what was Yosef doing? He is giving him 5 pairs of clothing. This is to symbolize the 5 ornaments that that Mordechai is going to wear. So here's the thing: it's nice, but it doesn't. I don't think it actually answers the question. Because the question was, you're displaying favoritism by giving extras to Binyamin. Ah, you know what? No, it's not a favoritism, because it's just to symbolize that down the line, his descendant is going to wear 5 as well. I'm not sure if that fully addresses the favoritism part. If anyone has a better read of the Gemara of how that addresses the favoritism question, I might just not understand the answer to the Gemara well enough, but to me, it sounds like the Kasha was never fully resolved. Okay. Be as it may, that's the end of the Gemara for today. With the last 10, 15, whatever minutes we have, I want to raise a question that is a little, I don't know how it connects to the Gemara, to be honest. So I have Cheshuvi Chemed over here. As we know, our good friend, Silverstein Shlita, he likes to use the Gemara as a springboard to ask fascinating questions. He quotes the line in the Gemara, Hi Rishi Mikal Kasi, that this Rasha Haman is coming to kill me. So, it talks about killing in the Gemara. Let me give you a random case about killings. That's how this works. But I actually want to share it because I think it's in Yana Dioma. The question is as follows. Listen to this. It's actually a lot less relevant to our Gemara, hardly relevant, but it's very relevant for the discourse that's taking place in America right now. Shaila, Maisa B'magid Shir Ba'agasa Yeshivos, Sheyeshul Tala Kishroni, So there was a story of a Rebbe at a yeshiva who had a student who actually was a very talented guy, very intelligent, but he could see that he wasn't able to concentrate and he wasn't able to learn the way he used to. So what happened was this student, he was ridden with guilt. One Purim, you ever go, I'm not sure if we do it so much in our shul, but my shul growing up, kids would have all these like devices that would make big, you know, bangs and pops and
firecrackers.
Thanks, Toby. I feel like I should know that. Ve'isha apila eswada mitoch pachad ubasa. So it's a very sad case in which a woman, unfortunately, she was so terrified, it just like took her by surprise that it triggered a miscarriage. And Bad Hayom Hu Zokra Hatins Masehu, until this very day he remembers what happened. Umeyaz Ibidis Harikus Blima, and that's when everything began going downhill from him from all the guilt that he experienced. And since he can't get any respite, he can't get any peace of mind, Usholtan Mahi Dar Shubaso, he asks his Rebbe, how do I do tshuva for something like this? So the natural connection is we're not doing the whole share on abortion. I think, did we ever do a share on abortion? Did we ever do that share? Well, we're not doing it tonight, but this actually relates very strongly. So there's a machlokus between the Rambam and Rashi about the nature of a fetus. The Rambam says that ben noah shaharg nefesh afil uber me'imo neharag alav. That if a, this is going back to our discussion before, Jews versus non-Jews, if a non-Jew, this is a question that comes up, again, I'll be very clear, I'm just speaking, this is all theoretical, just in the terms of learning, I'm not here to give psak or policy decisions on Roe v. Wade or any of that, this is just came up in the Gemara, in our Limud. So the halacha, the Rambam writes, is that if a non-Jew kills a fetus, even a fetus, he actually is put to death as an actual act of murder. This is Rambam Lashitaso. Rambam believes that a child within its mother's womb, the fetus, is actually a baby that just hasn't been born yet. The Shita of Rashi in the Gemara Sanhedrin is that a fetus is a fetus. It's not a baby until it begins to emerge. He says, lav nefeshu. It doesn't have, it's not a soul. It's not considered to be a human being at that point.
And is that why the Rambam has to use rodeth as the reason in certain cases to permit?
Exactly. That's where we infer that from. Because yeah. For Rambam, just a matter of when the fetus is still within the womb, it's a rodeth. When it begins to crown, it's no longer a rodeth. But it's very difficult to understand why the child is a rodeth within the womb, but not once it begins to emerge.
Because he can live. He's breathing.
Well, so I guess you know, this is going to be hard to say.
In the area of if the mother could die, it's not a virtue
of being in the stomach. Oh, so yes, let me explain what Henry's referring to here. Basically, the Gemara Sanhedrin says that when the child is within the womb, we give preference to the mother's life over the fetus's life. When the child begins to emerge, we can't choose because ain't dochin nefesh mipnei nefesh. We're not allowed to save one life, kill one life to save the other. So the question is, what changed between being within the womb and being outside? Rashi makes it pretty easy. He just says, fetus is not considered living yet. It's not a nefesh. When it begins to emerge, that's when it has a nefesh. That's when it's a full human being. And we say, ain't dochin nefesh mipnei nefesh. But Rambam seems to believe that it's already a living being. So the question is, then, what changed between being within the womb that we give preference to the mother and beginning to come out of the mother that now we can't give preferential treatment? So the Rambam says that when a child is within the womb and is a danger to the mother, it has a din of a rodef, a pursuer.
But it's a danger.
But the question is, why is it any less of a rodef once it begins to emerge from the mother?
Because once it's out, it's not being...
It's not fully out, though. It's once the baby begins to crown, begins to emerge. So it's still causing harm to the mother. So the question is, what changed? If it's a full living human being and it was a rodef within the womb, just because it begins to emerge from the mother, why does that make it any less of a rodef? So
there's one big difference.
Okay.
That you, when it comes, starts to come out, you could see it.
Yeah, but why is seeing, and it's not quantum physics here. Why?
Well,
observation is the difference.
It's real. Maybe it's not real if you can't see it.
And that's the solution. The whole issue with abortion is we need to take the baby out to save the mother. The baby will be crappy.
Yeah.
It's on the way out. So
I hear you're saying the difference is on the way out. I'm not sure why on the way out should make the difference, but this is all to get to our question here. So this is not the sheer. I guess we had to address
maybe because it can breathe and it couldn't breathe inside.
Yeah, but that's more like Rashi Shita. That's Rashi who makes a distinction between whether it's considered a living being before or not. Your Svar Phyllis supports Rashi, but Rambam's more difficult to understand. Anyway, if we go down the Rambam path, and this is the Shita of Ramosha Feinstein, that to abort a baby is actually, he considers it to be a bona fide act of murder. Now, it happens to be, he says that it's an act of murder that is not enforceable, I mean, we can't enforce capital punishment, but it's considered an act of murder. Anyway, so the question is, what can this boy, terrible case, what can he do to do tshuva? So generally, we say, the Shulchan Aruch says, Hanogius Isha V'yatsu Yoda, if someone, someone goes ahead and he pushes, he hits the woman, and then she has a miscarriage, Ava B'shalo Nischavein, even if he didn't do it intentionally, he still has to pay restitution. However, here it's different because here, this is like Hamavis Chavira, Afbi Shachal Me'apachat, Potter Medialim V'chayim Shemayim. In the case in Bava Kama, let's say I blow a horn and I scare somebody, and then because I scare them, they have psychological damage. So this is a case that we say someone is Potter Medine Adam. We can't charge them in our courts because he didn't do a maisa. This is similar also with Dibor, by the way. Except for the Mordechai, most people hold, and this is a case in Bava Kama as well, if I humiliate someone with words alone, me ikar hadin, there's no restitution that's paid for that because I didn't do a mice. I didn't do an act. I mean, think about America. If I insult somebody in America, you can't take me to court and make me pay restitution for humiliation. Now, defamation, that's a separate discussion. So here, what he's suggesting is that this buffer over here through the dynamite, it's not like the dynamite exploded and shrapnel, God forbid, you know, hits the woman and then the baby, but it was just the psychological scare. So he's actually not even chayv to pay money, midine adam, he's chayv midine shamayim. Good, so he wants to do tshuva. He wants to do tshuva, he should give some form of restitution. So the question is practically, what's this yeshiva bacher going to do? So apparently he consulted another rabbi, Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael Fisher, Zitzal, and he told him, Sheishai midei chodesh la'avi ha'ubar, schar gedei yilame mishnais ilay nishmas ha'ubar. So this is actually interesting. Theologically, that he said that you should pay the family, and you should basically pay for people to learn Torah for the merit of this baby that was miscarried because of you. And what he ties in at the end over here is he says that the reason that this bacher was having a hard time learning and was beset with all this guilt is not just by accident. But he says it's based on what happened to Cain, that says in Bereishis, Vayasem Hashem l'Kayin Os, that God placed a sign upon Cain. In Medrash Rabbah, Rabbah Amar Asu Os L'Rotz Tanim, that he made a sign for all those who have killed someone. What does that mean? K'mo she'Kayin lo matza menucha margula nasho, just as Cain, after killing Hevel, can never have any peace of mind. El hayonav v'nav ba'aretz, he roamed the land. It doesn't mean he just roamed physically. It meant that he could never come to peace with what he did. So too, for all future generations, anyone who commits an act of murder like Cain, he will constantly wander, and his soul will wander as well, and he won't be able to find consolation. So what he was advised again was to do some form of tshuva, and then hopefully he could get peace of mind, he'd be able to learn well, and I hope this case, God willing, in the future only remains theoretical. But I thought I'd be remiss if I didn't share it because it related so much. It related to our Gemara, apparently, part of Silverstein. And apparently it relates a lot to Inyana Dioma. So we're going to follow Rabbi Cohen's sock of not discussing politics at shul. But this is Talmud Torah, and we're not discussing through a political lens. We're doing it as a form of Talmud Torah, and you can take that with you. 4th of July. Oh, okay. I have a 4th of July share now also. Very good. Fireworks. All right. Shkoach, everyone. Wishing everyone a wonderful Shabbos. Thank you for coming and learning. And again, if anyone has any ideas how they want to mark the completion of the first parak in God willing 2 weeks, let me know. I'm all game for it. Okay. You come join us.
Good Shabbos.
Thanks, everybody.
Good Shabbos, everybody.